You guys, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books was nominated for a Webby Award, which is this really prestigious award that I am dying to win. And there's a People's Voice component, and you can vote and get me from number two, second place, to first place. But you have to vote. Please go to vote.webbys.com. Vote.webbys.com, but it's kind of complicated, so it might be easier just to go to zibbyowens.com or my Instagram at zibbyowens, where it'll always be in my stories and it's in one of those little circle highlights. Please, please, please vote. Voting ends April 18th and I'm in second place, so please vote for best individual episode, talk show, interview show. Thank you so much.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, this is Zibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. And speaking of books, I have two of my own books coming out this spring and summer. Princess Charming is a picture book, which debuts on April 19th, and Bookends, a memoir of love, loss, and literature, comes out on July 1st, and it is truly a labor of love. I hope you'll pre-order, order, and join me on tour as I go across the country. You can find out more at zibbyowens.com or bookendsmemoir.com. And you can follow me on Instagram at zibbyowens because I always post about everything. Enjoy the show. Courtney Mom is the author of The Year of the Horses, a memoir. She is also the author of 3 acclaimed novels, as well as a popular guidebook before and after the book deal. Her other novels include Touch and Costa Alegre, and she has been on this podcast to discuss both of those already, so you can flip back through the episodes and listen to those if you haven't gotten enough after this episode. But by the way, Before and After the Book Deal is a writer's guide to finishing, publishing, promoting, and surviving your first book, which many of you out there could probably use. A nominee for the Joyce Carol Oates Prize, Courtney's writing has been widely published in such outlets as the New York Times and O, the Oprah Magazine, and her short story, This Is Not Your Fault, was turned into an Audible original. She is the founder of the collaborative artist residency, The Cabins, host of the monthly Writing a Fiction series at Edith Wharton's The Mount, and she pens the bi-monthly newsletter Get Published, Stay Published out of her house in Litchfield County, where she lives with her daughter, husband, and cat. There she is. Welcome, Courtney. This is what, your third time on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books? Touch, Costa Alegre,
so, yeah.
Year of the Horses. I mean, amazing. So exciting.
Thank you for having me again.
I said to Kyle at the beginning of the book, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm reading about Courtney Mom's depression. And he's like, was she depressed because she got stuck in Mexico? I was like, writing that other novel. I was like, no.
Definitely not. No, that was a very happy time in my life.
Okay. So what, we met, what, 2 years ago? I was so surprised by everything in this book. I did not know. I had like a totally different, perception of you. I was like, really? And I flipped. I'm like, this is her book, right?
Really? Well, I mean, you know what? That actually makes me happy to hear, because something I think that so many of us struggle with, and I'm sure that you fall into this camp because, you know, you're a public person and people look at your social media and everything you're doing, and many people must think, oh my gosh, Zibi has it all. She's doing it all. She's spinning all the plates. And as you well know, social media is fun. And, you know, to a certain extent, it can be authentic, but it's also sort of becomes our job to, let's see, you know, look a certain way in public. Right. And I do think, unfortunately, that social media has allowed us to become lazy and kind of poor friends to one another, because we rely a little bit too much on the feed, the social mm-hmm. media feed, to stand in for what might actually be happening in someone's life. So, right, you see people out and about and they'll say, oh my gosh, it looks like from Instagram, like you're doing all the things, you're in all the places, and that blocks you from actually being able to say how you really are. Because what are you going to do? Negate yourself, you know, or say, oh no, those images are fake, right? It's a very delicate dance. And it's, I think with the pandemic, a silver lining is that people are a little bit more tuned to saying, but are you really okay? You know, mm-hmm. what's really going on? And I'm happy to see that shift. But yeah, certainly people, I think really we have a lot in common. Like, I'm a taskmaster. I do the things. I time management really well. And it wasn't convenient for a lot of people in my life for me to fall apart. So they kind of decided not to see it.
Interesting. Okay. First of all, your childhood. So you grew up in Greenwich and your dad was on Wall Street in the city, and yeah, you like went to Greenwich Academy or something like
that. The whole thing. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And you owned a horse. And
well, I thought we owned a horse, but it turned out it was a lease. But okay, whatever.
I feel like that's the same, whatever. Partial lease. I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about, but fine.
Yeah, it was still a very fortunate, privileged childhood. Yeah.
And yet there was so much that was going on, like in every family, like that doesn't mm-hmm. protect you from everything. The story about your brother, well, his health issues and the moment in the pool where you found him sort of floating in the pool and resuscitated him with his seizures and everything. And, you know, you explain later what they found out about his dual sort of heart condition or whatever was actually causing it. But that you felt this need to be this perfectionist while your brother was really suffering. And I feel like that often happens when there's a problem, right? That some child soaks up all the attention, or maybe you were just going to be like that anyway. But mm-hmm. I don't know, speak about like him growing up with him, like your whole family dynamic and how it had to sort of take that, the bounce in the, you know.
Yeah, my brother's health issues started to manifest when he was just turning 5 and I was about 9, which coincided with the dissolution of my parents' marriage, which I was not a coincidence. My dad only wanted one child. He now has 5. But he really did, you know, he wanted one kid, and my mom fought and fought. She really wanted a second child. And by the time my brother's health issues began, my dad was just, you know, checked out in many ways. And it's like hard to speak about because it was so opaque back then. The best doctors in the country could not figure out what was going on with my brother. He kept having these sudden cardiac arrests, you know, which is a 5, 6, 7-year-old is incredibly dangerous and rare. And my mom more or less moved into this hotel room by the Yale New Haven Children's Hospital. And, you know, I was alone a lot. I stayed with friends. I eventually ended up moving into my father's house in high school when my brother's health had just completely deteriorated. And I don't know, I just, self-sufficiency to me became absolutely crucial. It was the only way I could see to go forward. I mean, when I moved in with my dad, he lived in this development called Conyers Farm, which is actually where the Greenwich Polo Club is. And you know, my friends were really far away, but I couldn't stand just being locked up in this house. My dad was never there. I didn't know where he was. And I started like long distance biking. My dad, I credit him for this. I really do. He wouldn't give me an allowance. You know, it's Greenwich in the 80s. My friends were very fancy. And I talk about this in the book. They're going out for sushi. They're doing all these things. And I wanted to at least be at the table, right? I think my first job was when I was 13, and I always had a job, which was very unusual in my social circle. And that the feeling that if I can rely on myself emotionally, financially, professionally, that'll be okay has never left me. And that's what made my unraveling so hard for me, because I was in denial about it myself, because I'd always just risen to the occasion, you know, no matter what, I'd worked through it. I'm a solution finder. That's sort of my forte. And I fell apart, you know, and it seemed like the only one who could pick me back up was me. Well, it turned out to be horses, but that took me a while to find. And oh, my wonderful Joe, young Joe, the world's youngest therapist.
You wrote about your struggle with anorexia, how it wasn't even really addressed or called that. It was just like whatever, you know, like people just praised you for it or ignored it. And you had a line later where you said, you know, if my daughter were to go into her room at 5 o'clock every night and eat grape nuts and that's it, like I would throw myself at her feet or like make her do this. And back then, that's just like what happened. Nobody even noticed. And then, of course, it resurges later. Tell me a little more about that.
Yeah. I mean, that I think to me, that section of the book or those sections remain the hardest for me, because, you know, I write about this moment in the book when the world's youngest and smartest therapist, Joe, is really trying to encourage me to understand that, you know, I did have reasons to be sad, that there was emotional neglect in my childhood, which I was just really like, no, I wasn't neglected. They gave me everything. And he brought up this question of the anorexia, and it opened up this Pandora's box where I thought, like, no, I wasn't hiding it from anyone. They just decided not to say anything, except for, you know, I think there's two people in the book who say something. You know, the wound reopened because I shared this book with my family. Mm. And their reaction was just like, God, what was in the water in the 1980s in Greenwich, Connecticut? You know, my mom was like, I don't know. I thought you were just a picky eater and I didn't want to call you out on it. You know, you were so kind of, I don't know, difficult in those days. And then my stepmother, I sat her down and said, you know, you're going to read some material. Because honestly, the house we lived in was just so big that it was hard to know what anyone was doing at any given time. So I thought, well, maybe they just, you know, maybe they think I'm having a banquet or something. And I sat her down and I said, you know, there'll be some material in this that you might not be aware of. And I get into the disordered eating I struggled with. And she said, without even reading it, she said, oh, we knew you were anorexic.
What?
Yeah. So no follow-up, you know. So that's fine. I'll sit with that. You know, I'll sit with that, right? We have things in our families that will never be tied up with a bow, or we all have our stuff, but that didn't feel great. Doesn't feel great, but you know, the gift of motherhood, if one is chooses that path, is that I can try to course correct for my own child if she, you know, encounters whatever it is.
Yeah.
Right. Be a little more in her face and annoy the hell out of her. And, you know, just watch out for these things. I mean, we're living in a different time, even the language that we use to talk about things, the fact that, you know, my daughter can choose from a variety of genders and, you know, things are different. And so I think, I hope that she's growing up with a community of friends who will have the courage to say to her, if anything ever went wrong, whatever it is, mm-hmm. to call her out on it and open up, you know, have a hard discussion instead of just this toxic silence, mm-hmm. which is so it's so American. Mm-hmm. You know, because if this had been happening now, I'm married to a Frenchman, and I can tell you whenever I go back to visit his family, with my family now, but, you know, if I've gained an ounce, lost a pound, like, I'm going to hear about it. French people, my mother-in-law, who I just love, I love so much. She's never greeted me without saying, like, oh, you look tired, you know, or like the taking stock of the other person's appearance and calling them out on stuff is very French. So, you know, I do think it's a, listen, it's not great, right, to walk around and comment on people's bodies and stuff, but there is, I think, a dangerous middle zone where, especially now, like we're starting to get back out in the world. I'm seeing people I haven't seen in a long time, and some bodies have changed, right? Some people have gained quite a lot of weight. Some have lost a lot of weight. Some look bloated from what definitely, as a daughter of alcoholics, looks to me like alcoholism. And, you know, it's hard to gauge. It's hard to gauge when you just sense with people that something's off. If I push, if I press, if I try to find what's going on, will the dam break, mm-hmm. you know, in a way that's going to flood everything? Or is this a welcome intrusion? That mm-hmm. these are emotional navigational skills that we're not really taught. I mean, especially those, well, I shouldn't generalize, but I'll speak about my own experience growing up in Connecticut. You know, the given example was to sweep things under the rug, to be good at everything, be fun, be up for everything, and, you know, land a banker husband and learn how to throw a great dinner party. And, you know, whatever was happening on the side, the prescription pill bottles, the vodka, all that stuff, like, let's just not talk about it. You know, it was very Updike.
Wow. Wait, let's go back to what you said a second ago about sleep, because that was also a big thing. I mean, you had serious, serious insomnia. And I mean, the way you described it with like this gray pallor you got and the, mm-hmm. you know, anger. I mean, sleep, when you're sleep deprived, just talk about it and I'll.
Well, yeah. I mean, so I have had chronic insomnia since the unfortunate age of 7, and it gets really triggered in changes in habits. So like travel, or when I was younger, it would manifest with sleepovers or social, like too much social interaction gets me a little jazzed up, and it's basically an electrical current I can't turn off. Periods of anxiety. I mean, there's lots of things that fuel up my insomnia, but during the year that I write about in the book, I mean, I still don't know exactly what led to it. I mean, I saw a lot of doctors. I saw a lot of holistic practitioners. I was in adrenal almost failure.
Oh my gosh.
So there was definitely some hormonal issues, but I stopped sleeping for like 2.5, almost 3 months. And, you know, I would get 45 minutes here or there and 2 hours. Even sleeping medications weren't working. Nothing could get me to sleep. I mean, people gave me all kinds of, I have beautiful friends here where I live who were running around with little Ziplocs, going to all the people and gathering up all different kinds of pills for me to try. And I mean, I tried hardcore stuff and nothing was working. It was like this, I don't know if I was trying to break myself down, like maybe fully collapse so that some other people in my life would kind of rise up and help or what. But, you know, so whenever I talk about this book, I do always say it was an insomnia fueled depression, because it did not come out of nowhere.
Right.
When I sleep properly, I have a very positive outlook, and I always have. But that precipice for me is always really close. And it's a, you know, I don't think I'll ever beat it. It's still, my insomnia makes it really hard for me to accept invitations to teach, you know, at like mm-hmm. summer writing workshops or to apply to retreats myself, because I know if I stay home with my schedule that I'll be able to work, I'll be able to write, I'll be a, you know, a decent version of myself, but I can't guarantee that if I go away. It makes me nervous about travel. I do it anyway. I love to travel, but you know, I do a lot of research to try to figure out, you know, are we going to end up next to a noisy, you know, it's a real, it's a chronic illness. It's something that I just have to roll with, but I have to really, really watch out for not going past that point of social stimulation that flicks the switch and makes it impossible, even with medication, to turn it off. But the year of the horses is very much about how, among all the different things I was trying, acupuncture, talk therapy, couples therapy, massage, different forms of exercise, you know, many antidepressants, it was returning to this childhood passion of mine that gave me a way out, you know. And I joke with my editorial team now, like, I'll require a horse at every on every book tour, please, because this has become sort of an emotional support thing for me.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, grown-ups. The Cat in the Hat cast is a new podcast from Wondery, perfect for the whole family. Join the Cat in the Hat and your favorite Dr. Seuss characters as they get whisked away on a new adventure every week. Fish dreams of creating his very own polite and quiet podcast. That is, until he gets a surprise visit to his Fishbowl podcast studio from the Cat in the Hat himself, and it becomes very clear that the cat has other plans for the podcast, and those plans are the opposite of quiet. The cat may be disruptive, but it turns out he's also a great help to get Fish out of all kinds of predicaments. Bursting with music, silliness, and rhymes, the Cat in the Hat cast encourages us all to find fun that is funny in every episode. So sing along to new favorite songs, try your luck at Titanic tongue twisters, have some fun with wondrous wordplay, and most importantly, bring your family along for all of the adventures in the Cat in the Hat cast. Follow the Cat in the Hat cast on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to the Cat in the Hat cast ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Wondery Kids Plus in Apple Podcasts. Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLaughlin. Jay McLaughlin is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLaughlin and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLaughlin stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLaughlin's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLaughlin's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern. And the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLaughlin. And so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLaughlin is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20. Capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital Z Zibby 20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white open long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLaughlin. Thanks so much.
No, I love how you said how it was so obvious to you that you had to manipulate your own energy levels to calm down the horse, right? And like,
oh, yeah,
the breathing, even just like calming down your breathing, how that was had such a profound effect. And like, you had no choice or else you would be scaring the horse.
Right. And you would, especially if you were on the horse and you get on and you're blocking your breath and you have your shoulders raised, which is my go-to duo. Right? Stop breathing, raise my shoulders, tense. The horse goes into flight, not fight, flight. and they bolt or they rear or they spin really quickly and throw you off because you're saying to them, oh, be very, very afraid. And they say, of what? And you, as an anxious, you know, depressed person, says, I don't know. I don't know what to be afraid of, which makes it even scarier. So facing the fears that are inherent with horseback riding has literally been the most powerful and obvious healing for me, because now when, you know, the way I've trained myself now, because I do want to keep riding, I want to not overcome my fears, but learn how to meet them better, right? So if I'm on horse now and I see, for example, oh gosh, someone's redoing their roof down the road and there's weird things flying up, blue tarp flapping around, it's my job to really lower my heart rate, start breathing, have a heavier body, and just let the horse know, like, hey, you're going to feel a little jittery, but I'm here and I'm calm and I've got you. And I'm truly able to carry that over now in a way where I wasn't before. So, like, for example, I have a book coming, the moment at which you and I are speaking, my book's about a week out from publication. And, you know, if I remember how I was with my second book, a week out, I mean, I was awful. I was a wreck. I was doing such terrible things, so competitive, seeing how other people's books were performing, you know, it just felt like it's my book or nothing else. And I was so self-concerned and anxious and jealous and like just not in a positive space. I felt very desperate, you know, about that publication, because with my first book, you don't know what the heck to expect. So it's a very nice place to be. The second, I think, is the hardest, because I had a nice go with my first book, right? And now I have to say, you know, some of it's just maturity, but a lot of it is really thanks to the writing, because I just now I'm able to truly look at the weeks ahead and say, okay, here's what I can control and here's what I can't. And here's the energy I have and the emotional resources I have, and here's where I can expend them and here's where I can't. And it's just, everything feels a lot more simple. And when things start to feel not simple and frenetic, I just think, I literally picture myself in front of a horse with the ears be forward, in the middle, or back. And if the answer is back, which means you're making me really anxious, and this is a visualization activity I do all the time, it's intrinsic to me now. I just change my posture and I change my breathing and I become heavier in my body and I calm myself down. And I'm able now to do that. I still have the wake-ups in the middle of the night, but I used to spiral completely into this swamp of like anxiety. It just, the 2 a.m., the 4 a.m. wake-ups, I would just lose my mind, you know, like, oh my God, I won't be able to function. I'll be late with my book deal. You just start going into these crazy avenues of anxiety. And I do this visualization. I'll wake up at 2 in the morning and think, okay, that's all right. You still have many, many hours in front of you before you need to be awake. Like, I breathe, I picture the horse, I try to imagine the horse's smell, and generally it works.
That's great.
You know, and I'm just so grateful to have that.
Amazing. I have like a bazillion more questions, but what book, what are you working on now? Do you have another novel coming, or what are you doing? I feel like you always have a million projects.
Well, I do usually have a million projects, and I started up two different projects before I kind of really went into pre-publication mode. One was a proposal, nonfiction proposal, and the other was a novel, and I was like full steam ahead on both. And then I just reached a point, honestly, Zibby, where I thought, oh my God, screw it. This time, I don't know what's next, and I'm just going to enjoy, well, excuse the pun, the ride. Mm-hmm. I want to go out. I'm so lucky that my publisher, independent publisher, is sending me on tour. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to be centered and invest myself in this journey.
Yep.
And take some time off. You know, I've had a book come out every 2 years since 2014. Honestly, it's so hard to have a book out right now that you do sometimes wonder, why the hell am I doing this? You know, you like work so hard and you have such an amazing editorial team, and you sell 45 copies, and you know, that's nice. So I'm going to try to hustle slightly less. I'm going to try, maybe it won't work, and then see. I don't know. I've got a bunch of different ideas, but I'd like to have an actual summer. You know, I'd like to have a lazy summer, one of those summers where you feel bored. Like, I would love to have some boredom in my life.
That's nice.
Yeah. So we'll see. And then, you know, I'm going to try to not be hurried and pick up. I'll do something, but I haven't decided on the direction. So we'll see.
I love that. You know, even your whole like demeanor is feeling like very in control and intentional and mindful and all the right things, you know.
Well, that's thanks to the horses, because I know that people have told me, like, oh my God, when I first met you years ago, like, you were too much. I didn't think actually Tony Perez at Tin House, who he's no longer he's sort of an editor at large, but I had like a editor, you know, when I went to the Tin House Writers Workshop as a student, I did one of those sit downs with a gatekeeper, right? And he was the gatekeeper as an editor of Tin House. And he told me later, because we became friends, he was like, oh my God, you were exhausting. Your energy was like this tsunami. And I thought, this is the worst person in the world. And he said, now you're one of my favorite people. But you know, that energy management, like, it's something also I'm getting better at, not as good as I am with horses, but with my child, who in the book, I really work through, like, or show, I think, the reader how my distraction and anxiety and worry was imprinting on my child, who, as a 2 and a 3-year-old, she was just constantly crying and kicking and having temper tantrums, only with me, not with my husband. And now it's the same thing, like, with her. Again, I don't always master this, but I find if I'm in that crazy place, if I'm in that crazy pre-pub space where you have to be on all the platforms, and you have to respond to everything and set up the Facebook invitations to your events and all, you know, you've been there. I need to do that away from her. She does not need that whirlpool mm-hmm. around her, you know, and I try. I think I nail it maybe 2 days out of the week, but if I want a calm, receptive, loving child, I need to present that front myself. And I find that in my friendships now. And like, this is all thanks slightly to Joe. Gotta give Joe credit, world's youngest therapist, and to the horses. I was not able, I used to think that my frenetic energy was like fun and alluring, you know. And it's not that I'm denying my true self, it's just that manic energy can make other people feel manic, you know, and that can be fun if you're, you know, there's time and a place for very high up energy. But I now better realize, or better see, I can see it like a force field. I can see, because of the horses, they've trained me to see it, what my energy is doing to other people.
You're like, you've harnessed it, you know.
Yeah. But you know, that's the thing about, it's this nonverbal communication, which I always believed in. But when you stand in front of a horse and see their ears pinned back for no other reason than you, whatever it is you're bringing is making them pin their ears, which is the only time the horses look unattractive. And you do whatever you need to do, loosen up your shoulders and breathe, and then watch the ears go forward. That's better than any couples counseling I ever invested in. You know, like, it's pretty quick. You don't even need a riding lesson, you know?
Yeah.
Just need to get in front of a horse. Now, don't take that to go trespassing on other people's farms, because the liability is, you know. But equine therapy is real, very powerful, and it works for some people who are unable to find solace in therapies that work very well for other people. It's been tremendously beneficial for war veterans mm-hmm. who just don't have the language, perhaps because they've been kind of raised in the military sphere to not talk about things and to just follow orders. Mm-hmm. And asking someone who, you know, came up in that kind of environment to talk mm-hmm. to someone on a couch and to pay them to listen. Like it, for a lot of people, that just doesn't work. And for me, I have to say again, I love Joe with all my heart, and I'm so lucky to have found him, my 23-year-old psychologist. But I will say I was so resistant to therapy because I've always been able to sort things out myself, and I would just think, go for a run, write a short story, mm-hmm. figure it out, and move on. Like, you're not going to pay someone to listen to you. You know, you have friends, but you know, sometimes you do need to pay someone to whatever, touch your head, yeah. rub shoulders, hug you. There's a reason that professional cuddlers exist, right?
No, that goes back to your novel Touch.
I think
the importance of that. Well, you know, I feel like a lot of your earlier life, not even so earlier, I feel like you've been crying out, your behaviors have been some of these like cries for help in a way, and yet still they're not heard.
Right? Yeah.
Like, it's like, what do you do when your last ditch efforts to get attention fail? And what happens is you pick yourself up and you learn how to soothe yourself, which is what you did. And it's really amazing and inspiring. So I think it's really cool. And it's a great lesson for other people to find whatever their thing is and realize that sometimes we can't rely on the people who maybe we want to come forward for us, but it's something that has to come through from ourselves.
That's true. And also I think, you know, it's hard, especially for women who are socialized to just kind of do all the things and spin all the plates. But sometimes we have to ask for help, you know, actually use our words and ask for help, and then forgive people if the help doesn't show up in the way that our type A brains wanted it. You know, that's something I still struggle with my husband. Like, Mother's Day is approaching, right? So I have very specific ideas of what I would like him to, how I would like him to show up for me that day. And, you know, now I'm presented with a choice. I can either tell him flat out or hope that he'll get my secret, right? Yeah. And be disappointed. So, you know, looking back now, if I'd had the courage and less shame, I wish I'd just gotten on the phone with a friend and said, hey, I need you to drive out for the weekend with like 10 boxes of mac and cheese mm-hmm. and I don't know, tequila, or I need a hug, or, you know, and instead of these vague, like, oh, I'm okay, I don't know, I'm really busy. These are code words, you know? So if people can start using their words and not, you know, it can seem embarrassing, but you got to help people to help you. So if you tell someone, I'm really struggling, oh, well, what can I do? Nothing. Well, that's not helpful, actually. Mm-hmm. So say to someone, I'm really struggling, how could I help? It would be an enormous help if you could clean my bathroom. I don't know, right? Like, it would be an enormous, I just need someone to watch Netflix with me tonight. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's these very small things.
Yeah. And that makes the person helping feel so good too.
Like, because it's so hard when you're faced with a depressed person and they don't know what they need and you don't know, it's very overwhelming, right? So help people help you.
Courtney, thank you. I personally, having known you, you know, I wouldn't say superficially, but you know, the way we know each other now, I there's like this whole new level, and I'm just so glad you shared it. It's amazing. It's anyway, thank you.
And well, thank you for taking the time to read my memoir and share it with the audience.
I
so appreciate
it. So excited when it arrived. And anyway, it's great. So
thank you, Zibby, for your time. And
of course. Good luck and stay calm. You know, I love your bored summer idea. I love it. I just love it.
I hope that's, goals. Hashtag goals.
Hashtag bored. 2022.
I wish you a little boredom too somewhere, Zibby.
I'll get there.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. If you like this podcast, you will love my new anthology called Moms Don't Have Time to Have Kids.
Check it out, and you'll hear from 49 authors about all sorts of things moms don't have time to do. All the authors have been on this podcast. Also, check out my TikTok, at With Zibby and Tracy, my other podcast, Sex Talk with Zibby and Tracy. Check out Moms Don't Have Time to Write on Medium. And, of course, my new publishing company called Zibby Books. And now back to our daily author interview site and a quick hello from some of my kids.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello. Enjoy the show.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.